Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, it's the weekend. Happy weekend, everyone. And it is John Gibbons hosting this week, and I'm joined by Sean Bennett, by Ian Salmon, and by Mike Kearney to talk primarily about what happened last night. Liverpool played the game of football. It was a 7-goal thriller over in Austria against Hertha Berlin. So we're going to talk in part one about the lads who started and how we think they did and how they think that team acquitted themselves. And then all the way in part four, we're going to be talking about all the lads who came on for Liverpool, including, of course, the glorious return of Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez. And to talk a little bit about I think how we think the squad is faring at the moment, to where we think it's at and where we think it might be a little bit lighter. We've also got a couple of musical inserts for you today. We've got Domingo Hindoyin, who's the new chief conductor of the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra, who spoke to us a few weeks ago about coming over to Liverpool, which was really exciting. So nice one to the Phil for setting that up, and obviously Domingo for taking some time to speak to us as well. And also Matty Lachlan Day from the Shipbuilders about a summer shipwreck extravaganza they've got, and some new album news too. But before all that, we will talk about Liverpool 3 Hertha Berlin 4 and the guys who started. So to remind you, it was Callaghan goal, a back four of Trent Alexander-Arnold, Konate, Matip and Tsimikas, and then a midfield of Milner, Keita and Elliott, and a front three of Mane, Salah and Minamino. And I'll start with you, Sean. Goals each for Minamino and Mane, and nice in different ways to see them both get on the score sheet, and pretty smart finishes, I would say.
It was, yeah. We should have had more. It was a good game. I felt like we dominated it. We definitely could have won it. And the goals we conceded felt like every single one just completely came against the run of play, didn't it? But it was good to watch. I was thinking Salah looked so sharp. I think you could just tell the difference between the lads who were ready to probably start the season tomorrow and some of the lads who need a few more weeks. I thought that right-hand side with Trent, Elliott, Salah was looking solid. And I just thought the kind of crossfield balls from Salah to Mane, there was one, I think it was like in the first 15 minutes, Salah just pinged the ball to Mane at the back post. And it was just the biggest shame of the day that didn't go in. But yeah, they were all kind of in the right positions at the right time. Jota, when he came on, I thought looked really sharp. I think he nearly set Gordon up for a goal. Who I thought had a good game when he came on as well. So yeah, everything you'd want in a pre-season game, I think, goals. But then it's good to be, not good, but it's good to get the mistakes out the way with like the set pieces we were conceding and stuff, because we'll learn from that now. So you'd rather that be happening now and not in a few weeks. So boss, yeah, enjoyed it.
Yeah, your close personal friend Mo Salah, Mike, didn't get on the score sheet. I doubt he's up nights worrying about it. He's saving his goals for Norwich, isn't he? But, you know, he did lay on a couple of others, as Sean says. That close cross to the back post for Mane was glorious. And with Sean, he looks absolutely raring to go, mate.
The back heel was filth, weren't it?
Like, it was filth. It was the only way to describe it, Mike. He needs a COVID test.
to be fair, pre-season's mad, isn't it? Like the other season, we were crap in pre-season. We hardly beat anyone. It was always tight. We looked a bit poor in results. But, you know, we went and won the league. I think it was either we won the league or we won the European Cup that year. We had a fairly mixed pre-season. Remember the Napoli game in one of them where we got beat, I think, 3-0, and everyone was like, oh, what's going on here? But what I take from it is the general patterns of play and how sharp the players are looking, to be honest. And the second goal, Minamino's goal, is really, really good. And it's what you've seen on little clips of that they've been putting out on the YouTube channel, you know, the inside saying and stuff, and that you can see what they've been practicing. We don't get to see it all, but little bits that we do get to see, you've seen that in the goal last night, I thought. and it's obviously starting to work. You know, they've had a couple of weeks now where they've, you know, they've been don't forget as well, he trained in the morning as well, didn't he? We've seen they're doing that all summer. You know, Klopp loves to get the fitness right, and there's a lot of talk about that. And I don't think they'll be that bothered about losing 4-3 in pre-season. Okay, they'll be looking at goals and maybe how we can stop them if it does become a problem. But I just think last night we'll take, and the players themselves as well, will take a lot more out of the goals we scored and the patterns of play, and another 60 minutes for a couple of players. It's all relative at the moment, isn't it? The fact that it's all going towards the 14th, not really pressure on at the moment. The main thing we're taking out of that is the minutes in the legs, and the fact that we can score goals like that while we're not really at our full, you know, in full flight, to me speaks to how it's going to be a good season. Because if we were struggling and we weren't making the chances, or like the finishing was abysmal, you'd be thinking, oh God. But like, as I say, they all look great. I thought, to be honest, I don't know what it is about Salah. I've just got some, like, he's never not been in our top scorers, has he? Mm. But there's something about this season, I just feel as if that we're going to hit the ground running. I just, the intuitive, just at the back heels there, boom, doesn't need to even look, just does it.
Yeah, they're going well, Ian. I would say, you know, Manny's got a couple in pre-season now, which is good to see. You know, he's sort of experimented with different number nines. You know, I thought Taki did okay, and obviously gets his goal. And Salah, who, you know, hasn't had really this time, you know, for the summer with us, you know, since he signed, really. But, you know, seems to be, you know, looking so strong, so fit, and I'm sure the goals will come.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's not even an issue. As Mike said, he's probably saving up for Norwich. He's looked at what Suarez did against Norwich. Four goals is just a start. And let's see if I can get five in the first game of the season. He looks sharp. He looks, yeah, this extended period of an actual, we've accidentally had a proper pre-season of training. The matches don't matter. It doesn't matter what happens in the matches, except for the nice things that happen, which in which case they really, really matter. The goals we concede, they're just a learn. The goals we score are obviously magnificent. With Taki, I think it was lovely that he was in the position to score it, because the games last season where we saw him play, both for ourselves and Southampton, where he wouldn't have been in that position, he'd have still been in the deep positions. The fact that he was running onto the ball, and then obviously, you know, I've been the first to say it, I think it's time to move Naby Keita on, because he's not going to offer anything. It's taken me 5 minutes to go, Naby's looking really good, isn't he? This could be Naby's season. I'm on that one again. But our forwards, I'm also in the position where I'm going, well, do you know what? If we don't sign anyone, it's not the end of the world, because I can see the answers on the pitch at the moment, and we're looking good in all positions. There are things that they will learn. We'll get on to, obviously, the goals conceded, but they will learn from the ball that fell between Phillips and Williams. They'll learn from that, and if Phillips and Williams are still with us in September, they will learn from it. But the goals that we scored, you can see the movements. And Mané's, I think, is very important, because it's not an orthodox finish, because it's deflected on his way to him, and he adjusts himself perfectly and puts it exactly where you don't expect it to go. I think that's massive for Sadio. I think this is a huge pre-seasonal game, actually back onto his game.
Yeah, absolutely. To stick with you, Ian, and talk about midfielders a little bit more. You mentioned Keita there. I've got a feeling that there's a starting space against Norwich up for grabs for one of these midfielders, because I don't think you'll throw all of Fabinho, Henderson, and Thiago into that game when none of them have had a single minute of pre-season yet. And so you do feel like there's a space up for grabs for one of them. And in different ways, they're all sort of making their arguments. It's been a settlement field, really, you know, starters. You know, they built up, you know, a bit of a unit there, but Milner, Keita and Harvey Elliott. And in different ways, you know, I've all impressed.
Yeah, I think the most important one that we need to get back into three that are returning is Fabinho. If we can start the season with Fabinho as a six, then we're in a good position to build from there. Thiago would be nice, but as you said, there's definitely space for one. And my feeling at the moment would be Harvey Elliott. I want to see if this is something that we're actually committing to. I think that if we are committing to the idea of Harvey Elliott in midfield, where he is looking absolutely excellent, then we're possibly looking at buying a forward rather than a midfielder. It could be why the Neuhaus links have gone quiet, the Sauer links being knocked back. It could well be. And I know he's only 18. And I don't want to get too excited about an 18-year-old prospect, but it could well be that we're looking at this lad doing the job that we want a midfielder to do, because he's looking smart in there. His closing's great. His energy's brilliant. He's reading the game wonderfully. He's always where he needs to be. His shooting from distance might need to improve a little bit to become Coutinho-esque. But at the moment, he's looking that Coutinho-esque player.
I'm off for getting too excited, Sean. I'm always off for getting too excited. And it's a Friday. You know what I mean? What else have we got going on? How excited do you want to get about Harvey Elliott?
Oh, first half, he was man of the match by far for me. And I actually said on a previous show, especially with talk of Shaqiri maybe leaving, like, is he ready to jump straight in? He's obviously, he's not the biggest lad. You know, he is young, he's developing. But I thought his strength in that midfield, like, considering he was starting alongside Keita and Milner, you know, proper established midfielders, he was just dominating the midfield. He was everywhere, all over the pitch, so strong winning the ball back, and he's just constantly looking up, isn't he? He's just constantly picking them balls out. And I think him, he's like a mini Salah, but just a Salah that can kind of, you know, play a midfield behind him. But I loved him. I think I was trying not to get too carried away, but you know, it's interesting what you said in there about being in for a midfielder, because it's probably because we haven't watched them play for so long, and then when you just watch one match, you get excited. But we have got a lot of options there, and I know some of them are kind of rough diamond, shall we say. But I'm seeing a lot of things that makes me think we probably will start the season without getting another midfielder in. And we've also got the number nines that we were trying out who can also play midfield as well. So there is a lot of options there, and it's making me think we're probably not going to get someone in, which is probably not what people want to hear. But yeah, I agree what you were saying about Keita. I think started off a bit sloppy, losing possession, but he really grew in the game. And it's, I think if he's keeping fit, you know, between him, Hendo, Fabinho, can't remember the rest of them. But I think I was out last night, so
sorry.
A bit of a fuzzy head today. But yeah, no, I think we've got a lot of options moving forward. I'm feeling confident.
Absolutely. Mike, are you all aboard the Keita train, or are you all aboard the Harvey Elliott train, or are you just seeing who pulls into the station first?
I want to be on the Keita train. I do. And I think it's just, I think he wants to be on it himself. Let's be honest. He wants to drive the thing. But it just, please God, let him be as fit for as long as possible, because he's not a bad player. We've seen, you know, not just in pre-season, by the way, we've seen it in spells at a time. I remember we go to Bournemouth in December when we win 3-0, the year we win the league, and he's great. You know, he links up with Salah really well. They set each other up that day for a goal apiece. And it's doable, and we know it's doable. It's just, it needs to be consistently done. And I think I was half thinking maybe we're getting Elliott on the pitch just to get him on the pitch and get him minutes with these players for one. But the more you see him there, the more you think, well, no, this isn't just a case of we need to get him minutes on the pitch with these players. This is an actual, well, we're having a proper look at him here at centre mid. And the Norwich game sticks out to me because he was at Blackburn last year, wasn't he? And he played championship level. And Norwich are that sort of hybrid Championship Premier League team, so it wouldn't be a proper shock to me to see Elliott start, because he's literally been playing against sort of them players of that calibre all last season, so he's got that in his legs. His last competitive game was against teams at that level, and yeah, okay, Norwich won the league and Blackburn didn't, but it's sort of not a massive shock to see that happen while we can still try and get minutes into legs of Henderson, Fabinho, Thiago and the likes coming back. I don't know where we see him fully playing in the future, because he's, you know, he's very playing off the right, cutting on his left, isn't he? I don't think he's never going to be as quick as Mo in terms of, you know, his pace. But I've always just been massively impressed with Harvey Elliott. It's Kate Gordon as well for me. I can see a lot of it feels weird to say when you watch these sort of kids break through. When you watch academy football, you can sometimes just tell they're playing a different game to the other players around them. I think Elliott's had that a long time now. I think Gordon will have that this season. From the pre-season that we've seen of him, you know, his touch, his way to pass, is everything. You can just look at some players sometimes and go, they're going to make it. They're going to make it really, like, really, really far. And I think Elliott, you know, if he gets his chance this year, that lad's going to take it, because he's absolutely determined.
Yeah, we shall see. But exciting stuff indeed. Okay, on to the back line then. And yeah, as I say, it was Trent at right back, Konate and Matip at centre half, and Tsimikas at left back. And all four have had good pre-seasons, I think, Ian. All four have sort of impressed in different ways. For some, like Trent and Matip, it's just nice to see a lot of, you know, a lot of kind of minutes in the legs, really. We know what we can do. We know they're very high ceilings. We know their quality. So it's just good to see them get a run in games and looking fit. And for the other two, in different ways, I've got a bit more to prove, if you like. But I'm enjoying what I'm seeing from both of them.
Oh, completely. I mean, it's been a massive bonus having Trent on the field, because when he got the injury at the end of the season, or not the end of the season, in the England warm-ups, there was talk that he would be out until September.
Yep.
So the fact he's managed to get a full pre-season and he's looking sharp is absolutely brilliant. And, you know, we know he had that little lull middle of last season, but everyone had a lull middle of last season. That conversation that was going on about whether he's good enough to play for England was absolutely ludicrous. Of course he is. The best right back in world football. And he's playing like that again at the moment. So it's great to see. Matip, again, as with Keita, as Mike was saying, the key is if we can keep Matip fit, then we've got a hell of a centre-back there and possibly a fourth-choice centre-back. Matip and Konate seriously look like they'll be starting the season, because obviously wonderful as it was to see the others come on, and we will talk about them, they're not going to start against Norwich. That'd be a ridiculous thing to do. So Matip and Konate have to be our first choice for the first game, and it's looking like a partnership. They look authoritative. Konate looks an absolute unit, but with absolute skill to go with it. He's got a good passing range. He's willing to take the ball up. I think it was a Talking Reds the other day, that the idea that the two of them might be dribbling out of central defence at the same time worries me a little bit, but I'm sure we'll sort that. But no, we're looking good. And Tsimikas, to anticipate that throw from the keeper to nip in and get the ball to cross for the first, that was the best thing I think we've seen from the lad so far. So it could well be that he is a good option to give Robbo a rest occasionally, which I wouldn't have thought last season. So, you know, he obviously had a rough time with injury and COVID and settling into a team where the back four was completely disrupted, so he couldn't get minutes. So this could be the making of him as well.
Yeah, I've been enjoying Tsimikas all summer, Sean. He's looked, you know, the player I guess we thought we were getting, and, you know, he's looked a real good option. I think he's a good attacking threat. But he's pretty sort of solid at the back as well. And so you can see why they got him in now. And a good preseason could do, you know, wonders for him.
It will. I think the fullback position, I'm feeling really confident on. I think if we can keep Williams and he's not niggling for a move anytime soon, I think we're well stocked in those positions. And not just that, well stocked in terms of, you know, coming on to get a few minutes. I think we can genuinely rotate, and hopefully there isn't the biggest drop-off in quality that we've maybe seen in previous seasons. I think for me, the clearest thing from watching the game and the biggest question mark we've got is just around the central defence. And I feel like you could feel that in part of the games. I know Matip and Konate are having to really work on that partnership now to get it right for Norwich, but I could kind of feel that still needs a bit more work. And yeah, the biggest bonuses was obviously seeing Virgil and Gomez come on, but even for the for their fourth goal, I think he was pretty much sat down for that one, wasn't he? Which is all right. He redeemed himself for Ox's goal. I think it came from his header, didn't it, towards the end. So, you know, it's not going to be a straight path to him getting back to exactly where he was, but that is my my only worry, I think, going into the start of the season, because I think that centre-back is still pretty unsettled, coming off the back of a whole season where it's been unsettled. So open the iron out the little issues before the first game.
Yeah, when Sean's right, we're used to new centre-half partnerships at Liverpool. We had about 14 last season, which feels like an exaggeration, but I think is actually the correct number. And these are another two. There's maybe a couple of times, you know, in the first half where, you know, you sense the understanding sort of not quite there at the moment, but they both look really good footballers. And both are really good defenders as well. And so you think there's enough bases there for them to, you know, and enough games left, you know, hopefully with these two 60-minute ones that were casually thrown in yesterday for sort of next week to mess apart all over the gaff. You know, there's time, isn't there, to get it right? And they should be able to get it right because they're both really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we did quietly, we did really, 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 really well last year in the situation we've had. And no disrespect to them players, but you'd think Konate and Matip are just a you know, a couple of levels above. And we've seen Joel, you know, we've seen him, he's fantastic. So I'm there's a little bit of concern, I suppose, but for me, I think once you get, and I mean, by the way, no disrespect to Kelleher or Adrian, but once Alisson's behind them too, I think they'll go, right, sure. Well, we clearly know he's the number one at Liverpool when they come. Konate does anyway, and Matip's played with them before. I just think, to me, that's even though there's like a massive worry about going forward and hopefully, you know, Virgil and Gomez don't suffer any more knocks or setbacks, but I'm fairly comfortable, I think, with centre-half, because from what I've seen of the new lad, he's absolutely rapid and he's an absolute unit. Like where it really hit me is when I seen him on the bikes, I thought, he looks like he's riding a kid's bike there. He's that
big. Like the BMXs in the Olympics.
Yeah, he was just making this bike look absolutely insignificant. And I was like, well, he's absolutely monstrous. He's gonna be really good for Liverpool. And you know, we've got the as you say, the two games next week, and we got that. I think the Bilbao game is where we'll probably see what the decision's going to be for Norwich in terms of the fullbacks. I think Trent will definitely play because he's had the whole preseason. But
yeah,
I like Tsimikas, you know, to be fair, he's been really good. But I don't know whether Klopp's going to think, well, we've got Tsimikas really, really pair him. We'll try and give Rabo the 60, 75 against Norwich to get his legs under him. Or you know, we don't really need to, I don't think, because he's a viable option at left back. And as I said, the more we can, even last season when you see Fabinho step forward into midfield, just the whole Klopp teams are like a machine, and you take one cog out and it's always different. You know, Fabinho steps back into midfield last season, all the control of the game is well different. So once the whole team is fitted together, as you know, as we know it can, we defend from the front. We, you know, there's no worry for me. I do expect and hope, anyway, hope more than expect, but do expect that we will be really, really comfortable from the start of the season.
Yeah, we shall see. Just finally on Kelleher, you mentioned the goalkeepers. How are you feeling him as a number two? He looks a handy goalkeeper for me, but would he be sort of at the level that you want for a number two goalkeeper going into a championship season?
I think he's absolutely fine. He came in last season. He proved what he can do. He's good with his feet. The moment when he became number two above Adrian was, I think, absolutely vital for us, because his entire time at the club has been Klopp's time at the club. So he's grown through how Klopp wants a goalie to play. He's not coming in from elsewhere. If you brought in another goalie from elsewhere, then you'd have to teach him to get the way we play football. Kelleher already knows that. So, you know, each game he played, he was making decent saves. He's, what's a number two keeper nowadays? Yeah, it's the weirdest job in football, because you're a lad who's good enough to do the job, but you're never going to do the job because you're going to spend most of your career sat on a bench. So I think he's good enough to do it. He's good enough to be number two. There's no need to look anywhere else for him. Absolutely fine for me.
Oh, sorted. Up to Reds. Okay, we'll have a little break now. Well, we'll have a break in the Zoom call, but we're going to have a couple of inserts now. So you're going to hear me and Domingo talking about the Royal Liverpool Phil. You're going to talk about here, sorry, me and Matty talking about Shipwrecked over in Birkenhead over the summer. And then we'll be back to talk about the lads who came on last night. And it's John Gibbons from the Anfield Wrap. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Domingo Hindigan, who's the new chief conductor of the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra. So, Domingo, welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you very much.
So it's a welcome to the Anfield Wrap, but it's not, of course, a welcome to Liverpool for you, because you've already conducted the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra. So how was that experience for you, and how did that help you make the decision to come here as the new chief conductor?
Well, so far it has been great to be here. The decision is made by chemistry. I came the first time and there was this great communication between the orchestra and myself. I found a group of great musicians, fantastic musicians. And also, they were open to my ideas. I was open to their ideas, and the chemistry was great. It's like couples when they work in the first date, and it works out. So it's a little bit that kind of situation. And I came a second time and everything was confirmed again. So this the relationship worked. And of course, they were looking for a chief conductor and proposed the offer. And it's honestly for me and for all conductors at this stage of my career is a dream. It's a perfect place to be.
Fantastic. People who are in Liverpool maybe don't realise the reputation of the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra around the world, I would guess. Maybe you could sort of help, you know, educate people on that as someone who's moved here from another country, because for us, I think it's, they're our orchestra and they play on Hope Street and, you know, we like to go. But around the world, people know this orchestra as one of a very high standard.
Absolutely. Well, it happens often, John, that sometimes we don't realize what we have at home.
Yeah.
But the orchestra has a fantastic and great reputation abroad, and it's very well known. And not recently, since long time, it's an orchestra with a great tradition, with a very very deep history. Great musicians has been working together with the orchestra, great conductors, the own hall, the own concert hall, which is great hall and is probably exception in England. Not every orchestra in England has their own concert hall. The great catalog of recordings. It's an orchestra very, very well known, which is based in a great city with a great musical tradition and vibrant. So it's really, I think the audience from Liverpool should really come to the Philharmonic Hall and they will be surprised what amazing what's happening here.
Yeah, it's a fantastically talented orchestra, and now to be led by yourself. You mentioned the audience in Liverpool, and the audience, the regular audience at the Philharmonic in Liverpool, have a reputation of being very passionate, very supportive, very loyal, but also very knowledgeable about their music as well. Have you found that, and are you looking forward to entertaining this fan base? Really, that's what the Philharmonic Orchestra have.
Absolutely, since the first concert. I felt that the audience is a very important participant of this moment that is the concert, a performance. We have the musicians, we have the conductor, we have the soloists, and then you have the audience that plays a role. I think it's similar actually in football. When the hall is empty, then it's when the stadium is empty, it's something else. The fans is the 12th player, and I think here is the same. And the audience of the Philharmonic Hall is passionate, they knowledgeable, and they really like to enjoy the moment, and you can feel it from the stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. You mentioned briefly the building, but it's worth talking about it a little bit more. It's probably my favourite building in Liverpool. It takes your breath away when you go in. I don't obviously get to go in as much as you are at the moment, but when you do, you're almost, you know, surprised again just how sort of wonderful it is. And as a musician, I've been lucky enough to play there, which was a fantastic thrill, and it even made me sound okay. But you know, but for the orchestra, it just takes the sound to another level. So, you know, in terms of to look at, but also acoustically, it's an amazing space.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an amazing space. There is all what we need. The acoustics is very, very good. And there is a good, because some concert halls can be a little bit cold in relationship contact orchestra or performer and audience. But this one somehow it helps for the contact. And it's very good. It's very good.
Yeah, and presumably you're looking forward to calling Liverpool home as well as a city you'll have been to visit. You'll have seen the vibrancy of the city. So to be able to call Liverpool home for the next few years, who knows? Must be quite an exciting feeling for you as well.
Yeah, absolutely, John. You know, I'm a little bit a citizen of the world because I was born in Venezuela. I live in Switzerland. I'm married with a Bulgarian. My son is a kind of a big mix. Myself, I'm a big mixed. Home is where family is. Now the Liverpool Philharmonic is my new family. So for sure, I'm happy to call Liverpool home. And I have to say, people are very friendly here. I feel myself very comfortable. So I'm very happy.
Oh, we're happy to welcome you. We're happy to welcome you, of course, and excited to see what you have in store for us. I want to talk a little bit about football. You mentioned the similarities between music and football before. I'm told you're a big Real Madrid fan, which maybe isn't the most popular team to support at the moment in Liverpool because you guys keep beating us. So I don't know whether that's come up at all as you've been sort of here, the fact that, you know, it's knocked us out of the Champions League last season and obviously the final a few years ago as well. You know, you seem to have one up on Liverpool at the moment, and I'm sure that's been mentioned.
Well, yeah, I'm really a football fan. I love it, and I know the football clubs from Liverpool since very long time, especially the Liverpool Football Club with Rafa Benitez. I'm a big fan, and now with Mr. Klopp, I'm an absolutely big fan. But you know, Liverpool played better than Madrid, but Madrid has these beautiful years of winning almost everything and with these great players. But you know, cycles, they change and doesn't matter. But I myself, instead, I'm very much fan of Liverpool because being a Madrid fan, you're always happy when another team beats Barcelona. that game a few years ago, I think was 14, maybe two years ago, yeah. Here in Anfield, this 4-0, I think, or 4-1 was amazing.
4-0, yeah.
4-0, unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic night to be there, and the crowd so loud that night, and it was brilliant. I gather Vasily Petrenko, who you're replacing, was up at Anfield a few times. I saw a few pictures of him there. I think he got well looked after. So are you looking forward to going up to Anfield for a game? Of course, when we all can.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is one of my dreams of doing things to do in the city. I really would like to be in Anfield for, let's say, Liverpool versus Everton or Liverpool versus Manchester United. But this I have to do. I have to do that. And I will when we are all allowed, I hope soon.
Yeah, well, I'm sure with the Anfield Rap can help out if the Philharmonic Hall can't, but I'm sure they can sort of get you in there. I do have to ask you about the musicality of the Kop, of course, because it's a stand that's famous for the singing and You'll Never Walk Alone. And so as someone who loves music and football, when you see the Kop in full glory singing that anthem, it must stir something in you.
You know, this is magic. Absolutely magic. The description of that is magic. I think this is an example for every stadium, every fan, the fanatics around the world. The fans in Liverpool, we are jealous everywhere because it warms up and it's like the magic of the evening and the songs and they sing all so well. And it's unbelievable, unbelievable.
Okay, now it's great to hear. So back to the Phil then, and I know you're busy rehearsing at the moment. You've been rehearsing today. Is this period for you all about, you know, building up that that understanding even more, and obviously, you know, deciding what you guys are going to offer to the people of Liverpool over the next year?
Yeah, we have been working on that already since the last year, building the next season. And they will have ideas, and then I share it with the team here that are great. We try to play new pieces, to play also old pieces that are often played, but then we do it in mix it with other interesting repertoire. So we have a lot of great plans. We have a lot of great plans, and now rehearsing. Simply, I just think about the music and building the relationship with the orchestra and building what every conductor dreams to do, like the sound and working on musicality and technique and everything we can enjoy it of this. We're lucky to do this this profession.
So some excited things planned, I'm sure. I'm sure you're excited to start properly and to get in front of a lovely Liverpool audience and lots of great things planned. And yeah, you just want to get going, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And the plans are transcend, go further than the Philharmonic Hall, because will go also to the community. I want really to get involved in all the projects with the youth, in Harmony, the Royal Liverpool Philharmonic Youth, and all the projects around that. Is really, really, really great what's happening here.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. It sounds really exciting. I would encourage anyone within the city, or visitors to the city, of course, because lots of people listen to this, they maybe come 3 or 4 times a year, to do check out what's going on at the Phil. And yeah, it feels like we're in good hands, Domingo. So thanks so much for coming to our city and taking on the baton. And I look forward to seeing you in action.
Thank you very much. I hope to see you soon. Bye-bye.
And it is John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined by Matty Loughlin Day from the Shipbuilders. Matty, welcome. I say welcome to the Anfield Wrap, old friends, you know, me and you of the show. And of course, of live Anfield Wrap events, international. Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah, stomping ground this now.
So you did a live show with us in Brighton. People might have seen you there. Then you come over to Belfast with us as well, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah. Fantastic, yeah. 8 gigs in Brighton, didn't we?
I just working band in Brighton all that weekend. Yeah, we had yous everywhere. But it was good fun. So obviously, you know, a few people will sort of, you know, be familiar with you guys by now. But for those not, just a bit of a potted history on the Shipbuilders, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So we've been going for a number of years now. Gibbo has actually got on board on part of our management extraordinaire team. But we've... four-piece been described as Gypsy Scout Surf, which is something I always hold dear to my heart, even if I don't quite understand, but I'll take it. we've been setting up our own nights called Shipwrecked for a number of years, and I guess that's why I'm on here to talk a bit more about that, but we've got a few big plans.
Yeah, big party in the middle of August to talk about. So we'll get you on a fantastic, you know, all day event that you've put on in sunny Birkenhead. But before that, I'm interested to get sort of how it's been for you over the last year or so, Matt, because obviously you mentioned the Shipwreck Nights. You know, Shipbuilders are a band who come alive live, if you like, and that's been sort of taken away. But also, I guess the weekly prachies and the checking in with each other and stuff like that. It must have been quite hard for you. I know you work for the NHS as well, if you don't mind me saying. And so, you know, it's a year that's, you know, been very, very different for sort of everything, you know, really.
Absolutely. And it was, although we could kind of see it coming over the hill when kind of the very first lockdown happened, it did feel very sudden. And kind of all plans were, even, you know, not to go into it too much, but there was 1 foot in, 1 foot out. So all plans were kind of, do we cancel plans? Can we still go ahead? And then when lockdown came in, everything changed overnight. So we're forced to rethink, and it was hard. But one thing I'm kind of proud of us as a band is that we didn't rest on our laurels. It was a case of, okay, the situation's changed, but what can we still do within this time? So over the year, of course, meeting up in Prachium was hard, but we were still kind of very active in the sense that, you know, I was doing weekly streaming gigs on a Friday, bunker sessions, and they were great, kind of got a good sense of community going there. We were doing isolated sessions, and Jack, our bass player, was kind of putting them together to create a few live videos, and, you know, we were doing things like raising money for food banks and Marine FC by keeping active, by doing, you know, custom videos or handwritten lyrics or this, that and the other. And the replacement for the live gigs, but it felt like we were still kind of scratching that itch and kind of keeping the band in the collective consciousness. And then once restrictions were lifted, although we couldn't gig, there was a brief window between, I think it was a lockdown 1 or 2 or 2 or 3, I can't remember, where we were able to get into the studio, and delighted to say we were able to finish our first album, actually. So that's, although from the outside it might not look busy, we've actually been burrowing away.
No, I'm proud of you, man. I'm proud of how much you've done, and now you've been able to sort of, as you say, keep connected with the fan base and people as well. It's been really sort of cool to watch. But you know, things aren't quite back to normal, but, you know, we're all trying our best, aren't we, mate? And you guys have thrown together this wonderful party in the middle of August. It'll be first big gig for a while. I know you got out at the Angus, but this one, you know, will be the first big one for a while. And what a day you've got.
Yeah, back with a bang, all being well. We actually had plans for an all-day version of Shipwrecked last August, but before the week we were due to announce it, kind of the very first lockdown got announced, so we put the plans on ice. But we're heading over, of all places, as you said, to Birkenhead, so we're going international ourselves, it feels here. Future Yard. We've got it's a brilliant lineup. It's literally all day, you know, from about 1 o'clock up until last orders. So, as you say, just a massive party. And I think this kind of release, really.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And I know so many people are looking forward to it. It's sold really well. And the bands are buzzing, aren't they? You've got a little sort of, you know, email group going and you know, everyone's, you know, can't wait really, because, you know, you get into a band to play, don't you? And you know, going into the studio and stuff's fun and, you know, pretend you're the Who with a big load of massive amps and stuff. But really, you know, you get into music to play with your mates, and I'm sure other bands have missed it. And I'm sure, you know, everyone's going to put on quite a show on the 14th.
Oh, yeah. Everyone feels like coiled springs, ready to release, really. And the lineup's great. We've got By the Sea headline, and who we had in mind last year. I've been trying to get them tied down to a gig for ages. So to get them, it's absolutely fantastic. And then a lot of our mates on the record label were on May 68. We've got a lot of them. And we've also got, what do you call it, spoken word? I guess that's the technical term, isn't it? We've got some spoken word artists as well.
They don't like poets, do they? Not these ones.
No, God, no. Call them anything but a poet. So we've got like Roy, the all-conquering hero of Twitter and Violet Records. We've got Toria Garbutt and St. Vespaloose. Doing bits, and from a band point of view, we've got two stages as well, which is brilliant, because Future Yard's got an excellent outside area as well, which is, it's really, really cool, really, really happening over there. So we've got people on the outside stage and bands on the inside, and we're just raring to go. Yeah,
absolutely raring to go. So it's sold well, I know, but tickets are still available, so if people are interested, August 14th, where should they head?
Yes. And, you know, I'm bound to say this, but it's £20. It's a steal. You know, I'm not going to lie. It feels like it's a steal. There's about 14 acts in total across the whole day. So if you go to Skiddle or, you know, the Shipbuilders' social media, they are selling well. So there aren't loads left, but yeah, there's still a few.
And in terms of the album, then when can people expect that?
Well, it's a bit of a COVID/Brexit hangover. Unfortunately, it's been with the record plant for a few months now, and we're still kind of waiting on a date. There's a big backlog because all the pressing plants are in Europe, you see. So without wanting to get too political, Brexit's knackered everything, quite frankly. So we've got in the meantime, well, we've started work on album two because we thought, sod it. Sunshine. But we've got a few things coming up that I won't kind of spoil now, but we've got a few things in the interim to keep people's appetite sated, hopefully.
Brilliant. We'll get stuck in August 14th. If you are in the area, you could do a lot worse than go down and have a bit of a boogie to all this wonderful stuff. Can you boogie to spoken word? I'm sure people can have a go. but Martin, lovely to speak to you over Zoom, mate. Nice one. And take care of yourself.
Cheers, Gibbo, mate.
Okay, thanks a lot to Matty and Domingo. I hope you enjoyed that. Loads going on in Liverpool across the summer in all cultural aspects. What a city to live in this is. Okay, and now we're going to talk about the lads who came on for Liverpool last night. We've done the starting 11 in part one, and we'll talk now about the substitutes who got varying degrees of minutes and with varying degrees of success. But we'll start with the centre-halves, we have to. We'll do Phillips and Williams first because they came on first. We'll start with you, Mike. They both did fine. Do you think there's room for them both in this squad? And what do you think the likely scenarios are based on sort of what you've seen pre-season, but also what we know of them already?
I think Reece won't go anywhere. I was quite shocked last night. He's still a wiry kid, and he's still young. But the strength he showed a couple of times was promising. I think the Phillips situation is pretty much all up to him, really. As much as it can be, You know, if he's got an offer on the table and he wants to go and play full time, you know, week in, week out, then I don't think anyone could begrudge him that. But also, there's lots of conversations around Phillips, really. And I think he's been hard done by a little bit. You know, he's coming in to really well for us. And everyone was saying, oh, yeah, he's limited this, he's limited that. Well, don't keep saying it or the lad will get a complex. He's coming in, done a really good job for us when we absolutely needed someone, anyone, and he was the man. And I would be all right with him staying in the squad this season just in case, because we've all seen it. You know, the last 10 games of the season, we put a really good run together. He's a part of that. He's a massive part of that. And he started really enjoying it towards the end, didn't he? So it's for them, you know, I think Phillips has probably got a decision to make whether he wants to force it or stay. And there'd be conversations probably being had, if not already had, with Klopp, I suppose, and himself, and you know, and his family, really, because it's not just we'll move away. It's a decision for him, and for the sort of, for the, not just for the here and now, but for the rest of his football career, isn't it, really? And I think Williams will be really, we'll see the benefit of what Williams did for us last season later in his career, I think, and after he's filled out a bit more, that won't harm him at all. He will have learned an awful lot over the past year of his life.
Yeah, I think that's all fair, Ian, from Mike, and I think it is sort of up to them almost at this stage. You know, we saw what they were about yesterday. They came on, they headed stuff, and they did some defending, and you know, it is a case of what do they want? You know, for Williams, you know, does he want to play under 23s football this season? Does he think he's sort of, you know, moved a bit beyond that now? Does he want a loan, you know, at a higher level than the last one he sort of went out to? Or does he want to hang around and see what happens? Because mad stuff happened last season and it was quite an interesting place to be. And a similar way with Phillips, who's fared all along. You sense with the club, they're sort of leaving it to him. But, you know, he showed again yesterday what he's capable of and what he does.
Yeah, I think the whole thing hinges on what Phillips wants to do. If Phillips wants to move, then I think Williams stays. If Phillips stays, I think Williams goes out on loan. Because I think he would benefit from playing probably Championship football. You know, God knows he didn't start at the beginning of the last season thinking that he would be playing in the first team at any point in the next few years, I wouldn't imagine. But he did the job, and you could see the last game of last season how much Williams was trusted to be the last man in defence. So actually in the ground, you could see the shape of the team. You could see that Williams was given a lot of responsibility and coped with it brilliantly. Phillips, obviously, we know, headed everything that came anywhere near, apart from the cross last night that resulted in the goal, which may be the only thing he hasn't headed in the last year. But I think if he moves, one, we could command a decent fee for him. But two, he ends up with a Connor Cody-like career. If he stays at Liverpool, he's fifth choice central defender. If he moves for 15 to 20 million, that's the rest of his career sorted. He's not going to be any higher than fifth choice as long as we've got those first four. Obviously, if Matip gets injured, he moves up to fourth, but still fourth. He can go somewhere. He can captain a team. I think the sensible move for him in terms of his actual career would be taking a move to somebody else in the Premiership. And I think that would then make him for the next decade, basically. But okay. The lad might actually just love playing for Liverpool.
And why not?
And might back himself so much that he thinks, well, Matip possibly will get injured, and that does give me cup games, that does give me fourth place, gives me on the bench, at which point I think Williams goes on loan.
Yeah. Okay.
In other words, I don't know. No,
I was into that. It was a good analysis, and I think the one does sort of lead on to the other, and I think you're right to sort of point that out. We'll go on to then the big moments, Virgil and Joe going on. I would say, Sean, I haven't had tears in my eyes like that since your Lauren at Circus on Twitter. You know what I mean? And, you know, it was just a beautiful image, wasn't it? With the two of them, where they just give each other that little hug before they come on. It's they've been through a lot, haven't they? You know, the two of them, you know, to get to there. And I thought it was nice to Virgil acknowledge that on the Twitter, all the people who, you know, worked so hard over that time and all the support he's had to sort of get him right again. It was just nice to see them there and on the pitch.
Yeah, it was boss. Don't forget they've both had to miss a full season with Liverpool, but it would have killed them not being at that international tournament in the summer as well. Yeah. So, yeah, it was good to see them back. I think don't want to get too excited, but if you think of, we've still got a few friendlies left in the bag, they could maybe make it. I don't know. I'm holding out. But yeah, I think it was hard to tell much from when they came on so late. But I think that will just lift the mood around the camp as well. I think everyone will be made up to see them back. But yeah, I've just got fingers and toes crossed that at least one of them is in with a shout for Norwich, but we'll see.
Well, you talk about it giving, I'll stick with you, Sean, you talk about it giving the rest of the squad a boost, and you saw that because everyone's social after the game, all the other players were like, boss to be back on the pitch with Virgin Joe and stuff like that. And that's what they were sort of reflecting on. And even Andy Robertson, who, you know, was his first game back, but he was like all about Virgin Joe, do you know what I mean? And so for them, you know, they are obviously such popular members of the squad. You know, Virgil's case is he's such a leader in the team as well. It's huge, isn't it? And they'll have known how much they'll have both been missed last season and how big a players that they are if Liverpool want to do, you know, what they're capable of this season, which is lots of trophies.
Yeah, hopefully. But you've got, you know, Konate with his development, like if he's playing alongside Virgil van Dijk or Joe Gomez, to be fair, but it just lifts the whole of the back four, doesn't it? So I think... Yeah, I think it feels like a boost, and it feels like everything yesterday just felt like it was going the way it needed to. Like, we're getting more people back, as you say. I think it's only really the midfield to come back now and the keeper. So it's all going the way it should be, I think. And we could be in a good position within the first three games of the season that we've pretty much got all of our options there rearing to go. I think it's just down to rhythm, isn't it? And you could obviously, with so many changes last night, it's very hard to see how that rhythm plays out. But maybe those last two friendlies that we've got on the 8th and the 9th will start to kind of get hints about what that starting 11 is going to look like.
How do you think they'll progress in now with Virgil and Joe, Mike? Because, you know, there's these intriguing 60-minute games now next week. You'd imagine Konate and Matip will play a full 60, and then he could do 30 each. So Phillips and Williams do 30, and then Gomez and Virgil do 30. So that'll obviously be up from the 20 they did. Or do you think he might be tempted to push them a little bit more with half an eye on these Premier League games coming up?
No, I think you're right. I think I think that's what they'll do, because, you know, 30
each.
30, yeah, they'll do probably the second game and do 30 each. And because how many times have we heard Klopp say, we're not just getting them ready for Norwich, we're getting them ready for the full season and the rest of their career sort of thing. Poor Gomez, man, you know, this isn't his first rodeo, is it? He's done his knee twice and his Achilles as well in his first season with Rodgers, didn't he? So, for me, you can't be too careful with them two at the moment, and I'd rather nurse them back. I if I could click my fingers now and have Virgil and Gomez starting fully fit at Norwich, I would. Like, not everyone wouldn't he? But I think we just got to be careful, because just our fixtures are fairly all right, I think, at the start, and
yeah, not too bad.
You know, they're not too bad. I don't know when we're going to be talking starts for Virgil or Gomez at the minute in terms of competitive games. I think look, in football these days as well, by the way, it's a bit, you know, there's more people doing it and coming back from it. Back when Fowler did his ACL, it was almost career ending, really. So there's lots of developments on that, but, you know, the Liverpool medical staff have been really keeping an eye on it, because we've literally got evidence of Johnny from Wolves last year. He'd done his knee, didn't he, and come back, and literally 50, 60 minutes into his comeback start, he'd done it again. So there's a lot better people who know more about knees and body recovery than me, thankfully, making that decision. But yeah, it's going to be great to get them, see them do half an hour. And, you know, even though it's only pre-season, Virgil will be like, well, I'm not doing that again. I didn't feel right yesterday on the pitch, maybe, or you know, I just want to get back to my absolute best, is what they'll be thinking. But, you know, they're not silly either. They'll be talking to Klopp and all the fitness team around them, and knowing it's, you know, they've come so far to get here, but they've got to go even further now to get back to the absolute peak performance. And they will get there, because, you know, the really down-to-earth people and amazing athletes. So there's no worry for me about them getting there. They will get there, and, you know, they'll probably start starting games around the busy period for us, which is fantastic.
Yeah, loads of sensible chats from Mike and Sean, Ian. Maybe a little bit too more sensible for me, but it is realistic. And I guess we're reminded for their fourth goal when Virgil literally trips over his feet. But, you know, this is all a bit new to them at the moment. You know, they'll get there, but it will take a little bit of time.
It will. I mean, you know, there's that whole thing, the difference between fitness and match fitness. And at the moment, they're going for fitness. Mm-hmm. And they're a long way from actually being match fit. And last night may have been a more intense game in terms of pre-season, but still a pre-season game. It's not the intensity that they're going to see when the actual business end of the season starts. So I'd like to see them come back, getting starts after the first international break, nowhere before that. Which I think is mid-September, isn't it, if I remember rightly? Somewhere around there. So somewhere they'll just annoy us.
it's the start, isn't it? It's first 2 weeks of September is an international break. So three games they've got, and then they have a break here.
Yeah, so yeah, that's. I'd like to see them getting minutes before then in the league, but only late minutes, only coming on for 15, 20 minutes, as long as the game's comfortable for us. Give them half an hour next week, by all means. But nurse them into this because we can't afford them to break down at all. We need them for their own sake as much as ours to be completely sure of themselves, must be sure of them before they get anywhere near the actual nitty gritty of playing for things that matter. So it needs to be Canality and Matip, and then we move the others in bit by bit. So, yeah, sorry, I'm going to be eminently sensible about it as well. And with Mike, there are lots of know more about knees.
Do you know what? I just suddenly pictured like someone getting Liverpool in the League Cup and thinking, oh, we're going to get all their kids and suddenly and we start the Brazilian lads. Or actually, is Joe Gomez available to play in the Checker trade, Mike?
Oh, we're off if he is.
You can come up with us. Joe, if you want a lift, mate, in the party bus up to Oldham away for the 23s in the Checker trade or whatever it's called now. I can't even remember who's sponsoring it now. Someone mad. You're more
Papa
than
John's, isn't it?
Papa John's, that's right. Oh, dear. The Papa John's Cup, Joe Gomez, that's where it's at, mate. Swerve that European Cup. Come back, a tour of the Northwest with me, Mike and Josh. Anyway, a few more back, Sean. I don't know who else sort of impressed it. Obviously, Robbo and Jot said it was really nice to see them back too. Chamberlain gets a really nice goal in. I enjoyed a bit of Curtis Jones as well, just sort of being a bit of a scally. I don't know what you sort of thought of many of the others.
Yeah, he looked good, Curtis, didn't he? Looks like he's kind of going on the path that Trent went of just beefing up a little bit more each summer. But yeah, he's looking like he could be getting some minutes when we get into the season pretty soon. But I was kind of with this false number nine experiment. I was kind of toying between like who's kind of shone out of Minamino and Chamberlain, and it didn't feel like Chamberlain really got stuck into the game. But you know, the second half there was way more changes, so it's really hard to judge. But yeah, I think Minamino out the two just seemed like that link up felt more natural. But you know, saying that, you got the goal, which I'm sure will do us confidence. And yeah, Robbo, I just love seeing Robbo back on a pitch at any time. I think, you know, outside of the camp, he's just this kind of like joker, isn't he? But when he's on there, he's like screaming at the back line, sorting everyone out. And I think that was the nice thing to see, even when Virgil was coming back on, just kind of seeing that leadership that I do felt like we missed last season.
Yeah, he is just an extra presence. Isn't he, Robbo? Mike, when he sort of comes on, really, he's someone who, you know, he's shouting, as Sean says, you know, he's bombing on. Although I thought Tsimikas did well, you see that extra confidence that Robbo has got and that extra sort of, you know, responsibility he puts on him on himself. And Jota too, I thought, you know, comes on and tries to make things happen straight away as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Robertson's been there and done it with Liverpool, hasn't he? It's nothing new to him. And you know, he's always got that rounded about him, hasn't he? The confidence, the leadership thing as well. Really, it's always good to have captains all around the place, isn't it? And he's the Scottish captain as well, as you know, you would think somewhere climb up the pecking order to be involved in the captaincy around Liverpool. A lot of people look up to him, don't they? I think, and he's the right sort of character, really, isn't he? There's lots of things that we don't know about away from the pitch, but you'd like to think that everyone could easily go and talk to Robertson if they ever wanted to. He had a bit of a struggle at the time breaking in when he first moved, you know, getting used to the game, as a lot of signings have really, Fabinho as well and stuff like that. And it's just nice to see him back. And I was sort of saying before, I'm not sure what's going to happen. I think Robertson knows he's coming back quite early, and you know, doesn't he had a long season last season, probably had a longer break than what people expected in terms of pre-season. I think he came back at the same time as Jota, even though they were Scotland went out before them. So I think he's had a nice longer break than he's been used to, and a lot of positives, I think, in terms of, you know, Salah's had 9 weeks off, I think eight, nine weeks off. Sadio had a lot of time off, a lot of rest of bodies, and I know we had a couple of Dioros and a few injuries and that, but it just feels as if we're building towards a good season again this season, because we had a tough time last year, but it's not being made enough of that we were top on Christmas Day and we managed to finish closer to City than what City finished towards the year we win the league. It feels like, even though we are, you know, there's a lot of focus on us, it does sort of feel like we're a bit more under the radar than what, you know, we do a lot from the rest of the country, what you'd expect. And these players are born winners, and I can't wait for the season. I really can't. But, you know, we're going to get back in there, and that's just another thing that all the players will be really looking forward to. I can't wait to give, you know, Virgin and Gomez a clap onto the pitch, because we've been apart for a long while now, and they've gone through all sorts. So I can't. I'm too excited for the season now, and I half think that Kate Gordon as well, from the people coming on last night, he's just come from nowhere, hasn't he? We signed him from Derby, you know, obviously highly rated, and this pre-season he sort of took the chance to be in front of Klopp and go, well, you know, you don't need to go and buy a right side to play, mate. I'm 16 and I want to be starting in a couple of seasons.
Yeah, I agree with so much of the positivity there, Ian, from Mike, in terms of, you know, looking forward to this season. You know, the more the lads come back, I'm like, oh yeah, he's good as well. Do you know what I mean? And then we've still got a home midfield to add to this, in Henderson, Thiago and Fabinho, you know, to add to this. You know, obviously there's Bobby up top as well, and probably someone else will rock up next week and have a like, oh yeah, he plays for Liverpool. And we can all be guilty of transfer kind of, you know, gossip and wanting people in, and look, I'm inspired as everyone. I love a new signing, but you know, it's some squad we've got, and I'm with Mike, just a little bit under the radar Liverpool at the moment. Everyone's talking about Man United and what they're doing. Obviously City are champions, Chelsea sort of coming in, and it feels like people aren't talking about Liverpool quite as much, and I don't mind that, because listen, they all might turn around after 8 games and see we're on 24 points and wonder what's happened.
Yeah, completely. It's you look and go, God, we've actually got a lot of footballers here, and a lot of them are very good. And if we can get them all on the pitch at the same time, well, we can't, because that'd be 25 people. That'd be ridiculous. But if we can get a really good selection of 11, and you've got to remember our first choice 11, we know what our first choice 11 is, and it played against Everton last season, and that was the only time it played a game of football together. So that first choice 11 is absolutely spot on. Jota coming back is a massive for me, because I genuinely think if it hadn't been for his injury in the European game, that, you know, in retrospect, he definitely shouldn't have played that. And then I know a lot of people argued at the time, it was kind of like, well, there must be reasons. If he hadn't been injured in Europe, then I think we finished second at worst, because a lot of those 1-0s don't happen, because his goals would have dug us out and the momentum and morale from that would have rolled on. So, yeah, there's a player who's going to be absolutely massive for us. Thiago's going to be massive for us this season. We didn't see Thiago until last 5-6 games last season, where he became the player we knew he was. And then you look at the new lads, and you know, I've not seen enough of Kate Gordon to judge. I've only really realised how to pronounce his name today. So it's because it's one of those you only ever see written down, go, don't know. It could be
we're all learning, Ian. We're all learning together.
You know, I went on the Konate bandwagon for a while, and I've given up and it's gone back to Canati now. So yeah, we're learning about new players anyway. It's just that natural impetus to go, and I've been as guilty as anyone. We need two new players. We need somebody up front to take the weight off, and we need a midfielder. Well, what if Klopp's right and we actually already have the lads that he needs to do the job? Because it might just be that a couple of these guys now step up. You know, we saw with City last season, Gundogan suddenly became the footballer that they bought for the first time in 3 years. Well, what if that happens with Keita and Minamino? I'm not going to use the phrase, well, that's like two new signings, but It's like two new signings, isn't it?
There we are, Gutman, talk about them. Listen, we're going to go now. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Hope you have a lovely weekend. Thanks a lot to Sean, to Ian, and to Mike. Keep these preseason games coming. Up the Reds. We're going to win the league. Sports Social Podcast Network.